I want to talk about spiritual practice this morning. And it, in some ways, couldn't be a better time for me to do this sermon. This morning, I received a call from a friend whose father passed away yesterday, expectedly, but you can't prepay. You can't prepay your mourning. And I needed to speak with her. I received a call from, and I will be doing the service, a military funeral down in San Diego. I received a call from my wife, who was up in Northern California, expressing her joy at this baby that she's visiting, who is kind of, she considers a niece because this is her Mexican family from Puebla, a family that she met 25 years ago and bonded with and has kept in touch. And she went up there to see her mommy, Ruth, who is visiting from Puebla. It turns out that her mommy is only about 5 years older than she is, but these things can work out. Helene was also sharing her anxiety about her upcoming surgery this Tuesday that she's looking forward to with anticipation and dread. Can't wait to feel better and knows that she'll feel worse first. There's nothing unusual about any of these three things that I'm sharing with you. We all go through this. And the question really is, how do we find any kind of center? When in a world where we are bouncing off of good news and bad news, joys and sorrows, that we share joys and sorrows that we keep inside our hearts, where we are at a moment filled with elation at a birth, at another, fear and anxiety of an upcoming surgery or an ongoing medical issue or someone else's pain, how is it that we don't just act like mad caroms bouncing off of various walls? How can we find some place of peace that isn't denial, some place of reconciling those extremes that all of us, not it gets magnified for clergy because we're invited into these, but all of us experience? And spiritual practice, to me, is about trying to find a center. Now, I realize that in talking about issues of spiritual practice, there are some contradictions involved. It's like talking about music instead of hearing the music. There's a line about Bronson Alcott, who was a Unitarian minister, and the grandfather of Little Women. And he is said to have spent his entire life in a dark room writing about ecstasy. This is part of the contradiction of trying to talk about issues that are spiritual. Now, I also know that in addition to the linguistic problem and the central contradiction of my life, that I make my living with words, and words are an incomplete way of trying to express an experience, there's also that word spirit and spiritual and spirituality that some people confuse with spiritualism. Spiritualism is talking to the dead and having them talk back to you. I guess talking to the dead is what it is, but spiritualism is having the dead talk back to you. Spirituality is a journey for connectedness with ourselves, what is deeper than the flesh, with each other, and with the entire world and the universe. Spirituality is that sense that we are more than simply our immediate needs. There is, at the moment, a movement that talks about the denial, and I've talked about this a little bit, of the sense of the narrator that says, look, we are what we are, we're a biochemical accident, enjoy it, but there's no narrator. The sense that we have of self, maybe the word soul, is just an illusion. But I know the narrator. I'm not talking about out there. I'm talking about in here. I feel the continuity of who I have been over the course of my life. I am very much the fellow that I was that went to sleep last night and woke up this morning. There may be some changes. We do change, but there is also that, to me, wonderful and remarkable continuity. I can remember what I was thinking when I was in high school. Well, okay, I was a boy and I was thinking about Ronnie Goldstein and Jill Levinson, so that's not so hard. We can all remember what we were thinking in high school. I can remember what I was thinking on any given day in elementary school. I can connect with that little person. I can remember myself as a 14-year-old when I knew everything and wonder how I forgot it between then and now. I can connect with all kinds of experiences. Hearing the beautiful choral anthem this morning got me what they're calling for Hillary the verklempt moment. That's obviously a very old Illinois saying. The verklempt moment of feeling choked up by hearing that song because I remember where I was when I heard that Dr. King had been assassinated. I was in North Africa. I remember what I had to say to my students and to an assembly of students in trying to explain who he was and why he was important and why he died. And the music triggers the memory. And I go across time. I am the same. I am profoundly different. And so are all of us. Over time, as we think about the past, as we are the experiences we have had, as we are the anger and the tears and the laughter and the joy and the love and the hatred, we are all of those things that we have done over the course of our lives. And there's a thread that connects us. Connects us to ourselves on the inside. And I'll talk in a moment about the thread that connects us together as human beings. We are more than just our physical needs. Now, I know I get into trouble sometimes, and only in a Unitarian Universalist church, talking about spirituality. And I noticed that some of the people with whom I would get into trouble didn't show up today, so I guess the sermon isn't for them. But we are more than the animal needs of three hots and a cot, as they say in the military. It is not enough for us simply to have food. We need to have spice and herbs and something that makes it interesting. Contrasts of taste, of temperature, of crunchiness, of softness. We choose to have more than simply gruel every day, though that gruel would meet our nutritional needs. It wouldn't meet those other kinds of needs. We need a place to sleep. We need, at minimum, a cave to keep us from the elements. But we need so much more than that, don't we? We look in this room and we could worship, I suppose, anywhere, but there's something about sacred space. There's something about cathedrals, temples, mosques, ashrams that call us and center us. There's something in the decoration, in the colors, in the words, in the patterns that enrich us at a different level. Now, I know this is dangerous territory, but I disagree with those who believe that prostitution is the oldest profession. I think the oldest profession is interior decorating. I think as soon as people went into caves, they called up and said, you know, a Tyrannosaurus would look good over there. And what do you think if we move that little table over closer to there and maybe change, and then there came the remodel, and that's a whole road to perdition. But the truth is, we decorated our caves from the moment we came into the caves. We do it with all of the basic needs. Yes, it's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. But we do more than simply mate. We aspire to love. We do more than simply procreate. We, ins- aspire to connect with each other. We need to as human beings because our children are not born fully formed. They are not, you know, an amoeba is all it can be by the time it is split off. A paramecium just isn't going to get an awful lot better. And as you go lower, and I hate to be hierarchical here, as you go lower in the life forms, they are ready sooner than we are, sooner than we were, sooner than our kids were, sooner than our kids are. And that's part of the price of being where we are on the, dare I say, evolutionary ladder. I'm sorry, Mr. Huckabee, but there is this evolutionary ladder. We need so much more, and we need to be involved with each other, and we need to have our hearts larger than ourselves. And how do we do that? I think that part of that is spiritual practice, reminding ourselves of who we are deep down, who we are in life, in space, and in time. It isn't simply what I want this second. It is what I want for my wife, what I want for my mother-in-law, what I want for my children and my grandchildren and for the world. Those are the things that connect us to each other and to life. Those are the things that stretch our hearts and our arms and our pocketbooks and why we choose to have families as young people, as middle people, pulling families, not simply children and babies, but older children, because we know that by enlarging our hearts, it isn't something selfish, it's something generous. And it fills us and it changes the world. And that's something that is remarkable and commendable in our nature as human beings. We have the ability, we don't always live up to all of our abilities, but we have the ability to make connections past what seem to be our immediate desires and needs. We can postpone gratification. We can choose to, and this is not in self-interest, but we can choose to give to a church or to a temple when we really do want a giant 97-inch flat-screen TV. We can give to a museum, to a hospital, to a political party, to a candidate, because we know that our interests are more than our impulses. Our interests aren't selfish. Our interests are connecting. And that's where spiritual practice begins to come in. There's a tradition in the Orthodox Jewish tradition that I like, which is that there's a prayer that's said before praying. And it's a prayer upon waking where the person upon awaking thanks God for returning the body to the soul to the body. Now, without being a literalist about the body-mind dichotomy and not believing this as anything except metaphor, I understand it. I understand that we are fragile human beings and a change, a vascular change, a change in blood pressure, a hormone, a drug, alcohol, can change us momentarily or fundamentally about who we are and how we are in the world. And the fact that most of us wake up substantially the same as when we went to sleep, substantially the same in terms of character, maybe we're a little older than we were 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. Well, of course, by definition, we're a little older than we were then. But there is that continuity. And that's remarkable. I mean, there's no reason we couldn't just wake up blank every day. Wouldn't make an awful lot of scientific progress like that. There are some people who do wake up and they are considerably different. But that's aberration. Most of us know basically who we are, and that's pretty remarkable. And it's pretty, to me, inspirational. So when I think about spiritual practice, what I am trying to do are those things that connect me to myself at a deeper level than just the garments, the clothing, the skin, that connect me to my family, that connect me to the world, that connect me to the source of meaning in my life, that I might language or stammer or sing differently from you. But I suspect that we share many things, even if our words and metaphors and pictures are different. When I look at spiritual practices across the world and across history, you see a lot of the same things. Almost every religion has something to do with music. If it just begins with the drumbeat of the heart, if it expands to a chant that becomes a song and a dance, that we express in movement our spiritual needs, we express in singing and chanting and almost every tradition our spiritual needs that kind of alpha us out as we chant or do repeated chanting. We go into a place where we can do some internal work. There's meditation. My brother and sister-in-law, David and Gita respectively, get up every morning early and they sit and they meditate. And that brings, they go inside and find a peaceful place. Now, I don't meditate because my brain and head are very noisy. Sometimes my head is so noisy, I think the noise disturbs the people sitting next to me. That's a steal from The Gods Must Be Crazy. I need to acknowledge that because everyone's charging everyone with plagiarism these days. But that's not something that works for me. I get alpha'd out doing long-distance biking and swimming. Swimming's not too dangerous because you can alpha out and you won't forget to breathe, and when you come to the end of the pool, you will make a turn. Being alpha'd out on a bicycle on the road is probably not such a great career move. The spiritual practice and discipline that I use, however, is music. Music is what sets up my brain to go into that place where something transformative and renewing and refreshing and connecting happens. Once upon a time, I had the concentration that I could listen to highly melodic tunes and go there. But now I find that I need the kind of mathematical ness of Bach. I let the Bach B minor mass flow over me, the Bach lute suites and cello suites flow over me, and they take me to some place about which I really can't speak, some place of both peace and connection. And what I do, or what you do, whatever kind of mantra or mandala, whatever kind of practice we do, isn't the critical issue. If we look at the entire panoply of religious rituals, what we see is people find that connection in silence and in song, in stillness and in movement. It's kind of like dieting. Everything works if you do it. If you do it. And that is what I'm endorsing today, that sense of the priority that all of us need from time to time to be refreshed and renewed, to have a sense of connection with ourselves, with our deeper selves, and with each other. And we can do it by walking. We can do it by nodding off and not paying attention to the sermon. Seriously, that's just fine. We can do it in church, at beaches, on mountains. We can do it singing and dancing. We can be like dervishes and whirl, or we could be like dervishes. There are howling dervishes also. Not such good neighbors, but it's still a good spiritual practice. Everything works. And the amazing thing, and the reason why people don't talk about it more, is you don't have to buy anything. You don't need special shoes for spiritual practice. You don't need to buy a special outfit. You don't need the fanciest yoga mat in the store in order to get, I love the idea of competitive yoga, but that's just the strangest oxymoron to me I've ever, you know. I'm more humble than you are, damn it. You don't have to pay anything to find a spiritual practice that refreshes, that renews, and that connects you. It's a journey outside and inside. You know, when the Quran and the Talmud use exactly the same words, you better pay attention. Because on those little points of agreement, something's being said here that's pretty universal. And both the Talmud and the Quran say to save one life is to save a world. And to understand that each of us is a world. Our minds go to the end of the universe. There's no universe past which I can imagine, because I can't imagine it. And it goes as far as the farthest star, another line from both Hebrew Scriptures and the Quran, and as close as the vein on my neck, to that place on the inside that is self, that is soul, that is weightless, that is measureless, and they connect somehow together in space-time, outside and inside. And the only thing you have to pay is attention.